Welcome to season 5 of Overcoming Child Sexual Abuse. This season, we have a fantastic lineup of world-renowned experts and guests as we continue our journey of healing, growing, and thriving beyond child sexual abuse and trauma. Throughout this season, we're going to take an even deeper dive into new knowledge and insights, and we're going to explore even more practices that can help us each day to shift the way we feel in our minds and our bodies, so we can move through each day in the driver's seat on this journey and be free to make choices to step into all the happiness and well-being we want in our lives. Today, we're joined by Michelle Brock. Michelle is a master intuitive and spiritual development life coach whose latest book, Who Do You Think You Are, provides a powerful guide to manifesting the happiness and satisfaction we all desire. Michelle helps us to dive into our experiences from the past and past lives in order to better understand and experience our present, and especially understand pasts that may be rooted in childhood trauma and abuse. Michelle is also an intuitive counselor, a psychic medium, a master hypnotist, and has studied spirituality, shamanism, meditation, divination, astrology, and energy medicine techniques from many different world traditions. Throughout the book, Michelle guides and prompts the reader through an interactive journey with self-reflection, compassion, and enlightenment. As a result, we can cast aside limiting notions of what defines us, heal from the ordeals of previous lives, and embrace a joyful, emotionally fulfilling existence in the here and now. Michelle has helped thousands of people discover the stories of their previous lives, their traumas and triumphs, losses and loves, and help them step forward into their best lives. When we learn our stories from the past, we can reach unprecedented heights of self-awareness in the present. Michelle's work has been featured on Comedy Central's hit TV show Inside Amy Schumer, and her long list of influential clients include celebrities, CEOs, writers, artists, and academics. A personal protege of Dr. Brian Weiss, author of the enduring classic and New York Times bestseller, Many Lives, Many Masters, Michelle brings intelligence, humor, and rare insight into her spiritual guidance. Michelle's new book, Who Do You Think You Are, was launched this April and continues to be translated into languages around the world. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so thrilled that you're here with your new book, Who Do You Think You Are?
Thank you. Yes, I'm super excited about it.
Likewise. And I know, Michelle, that this book has been a journey for you of almost 20 years. So let's start by, why don't you tell us your story about the creation of this book and how you have come to experience that past lives hold the keys to our happiness and fulfillment in this life, and especially beyond the trauma and challenges that this life holds.
Yeah, it has been a long journey. It has been almost 20 years. And I got into this work through my own experience, you know, like any good life coach, right? I had an experience with my own past lives that completely changed not only the way that I look at everything, it's the way that I kind of was able to frame my entire existence and my sense of self. And I started working with clients pretty soon afterwards, and I knew pretty much right away that I needed to write a book about this experience, that it was something that would be maybe even best said in the format of a book. And over the past almost 20 years, it's reincarnated many times, which I guess is appropriate given the topic. You know, I knew that I wanted to tell the story of past lives and how they're important in how they impact our current life in this specific way. But I think that it took a while for kind of the society and the world to kind of catch up to the way that I wanted to frame this message. And I think it's because we've been through a lot recently, a lot of kind of collective trauma, as well as individual trauma. So I'm really, really happy with how it came out, because I was able to kind of stick to my original vision for the message of the book. And 2024, now it's finally here. It's reincarnated again. But yeah, it's been quite a journey. And again, based on my own experience.
Yeah. And you have had your share of traumas and struggles in your life. So can you share a little of your personal journey of the traumas you've endured and how the learning and insights of your own past lives has helped you heal and grow through those traumas?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I haven't, you know, like your listeners had sexual abuse in my past in this life. But I would say the most formative trauma in my life happened when my mother passed away from cancer when I was still only two. And all of the traumas that happened kind of after that came from that kind of initial wounding, specifically how my father dealt with his grief, which is that he pretty much didn't and got remarried right away, actually. I think that my mother passed in July and he was engaged to my stepmother in November. So once I started, you know, looking at my own past lives, I started to notice different ways that my past lives informed that trauma journey and how I healed from it. And, you know, I realized that my father didn't have a lot of emotional tools. You know, he met my stepmother and she was probably like, let's put this past behind us. And you know, as well as I do, that when you ignore trauma, it doesn't make it go away. It still stays there. And there were a lot of implications for that decision my father made for both myself and my sister over, you know, many years. Really quick, the first past life that I experienced, I saw myself as a man who was married to a woman that I recognized as my mother in this life, in that she had the same eyes. There was something about that kind of resonance of her soul. And in that lifetime, she got sick and she died. And what happened was that I just completely shut down. And I recalled this, watching myself as this man, basically coming home from work and staring at the wall and ignoring my children. And when you have that experience as remembering a past life, you have the perspective of today. So I'm kind of watching myself in a past life, judging myself, like, why am I ignoring my children? Why am I not getting on with my life? Why am I not, you know, grieving in a productive way? And so just even having that experience allowed me to have so much compassion for my father, you know, because it's really difficult sometimes to be like, well, if I were in that situation, I would have done things totally different, right? Well, there I was in that situation. Yeah, it was in the 1600s, so it was a while ago, but I saw myself behaving in similar ways to my father. So it allowed that compassion and understanding to ultimately allow me to forgive my father, see him as the flawed human being that he is, that we all are, right? And that was an enormously healing experience for me. And I've had many similar insights from past lives where the story will actually kind of line up in a similar way. You might be a different gender or a different place in the planet, or there's different circumstances happening, but the challenges and some of the traumas even are very similar. So opening the curtain wider to kind of see that, you know, over many lifetimes, we have these variety of experiences in order to learn and grow. Sometimes even just understanding that it's a challenge for our growth on a soul level helps us to be able to understand it, release it, and again, ultimately heal from it, which is the goal.
Yeah. And I think that's the amazing power of your book, is to allow us to step into that space of awareness, of really deep self-awareness of where do things come from within us, and then be able to say, what place do they have in our current lives? How Yes. do they help us? How do they help us to grow and heal? And how sometimes do they sabotage us? And you tie together three different themes in the book, which I love. And you structured the book around these three parts. Part one is honoring the past. Part two is live your present. And part three is create the future. So talk to us about the significance of seeing our journeys through those three lenses.
Yeah, thank you for that. I really wanted people to kind of look at the past, present, and future as a part of our journey and the way that they inform each other, that the past informs the present. It's basically our journey, how we ended up where we are at today, right? But I wanted people to understand that we're empowered to the future, that we past lives are only interesting as far as they're impacting our life right now, but also holding us back in some way or keeping us from the future that we would like to create, right? The future's not determined. We're always creating the future with our choices. Obviously, some things are meant to happen. Some things are completely out of our control, specifically the actions of others, right? Especially when we're looking at people who have suffered from trauma. It's not like you created that, right? Or you know, sometimes things happen, but sometimes we have a choice about how we kind of move forward from it and how we survive it and thrive moving forward. So I really wanted people to see that those were three pillars of our existence and how they inform each other and how they play a role in our lives today.
Yeah. And throughout your book, you go into what you are and what you are not. And I love that challenge because it really is a challenge to ourselves to look at those things. And jumping ahead to chapter 7, related to what we were just talking about, chapter 7 is titled, You Are Not Your Suffering, which is such a powerful statement in and of itself. And you share, and this is a quote from you, the growth from these experiences comes via the way we endure or handle these challenges, by how we step up and decide to work through them. This is how we gain wisdom, even if sometimes in a trial by fire. You're going to say, despite the trauma we have endured, we human beings are strong and resilient. Through the years, I have come to realize how much suffering so many of us have endured and how many of us still manage to survive, thrive, and move forward in a powerful and meaningful way. So, Michelle, talk to us again more about how our understanding of our past lives helps us grow through traumas and suffering that we experience in this life and not become stuck in those or defined by them.
Yeah. You know, our past lives give us a bigger picture view on our existence. And obviously, we're talking about past lives. The premise behind that is a belief in something called reincarnation, right? I don't want to skip over that, right? We're talking about the idea that you were lived before in a different body. And after you die, you transition to spirit form and then are reborn again in a new body, in a new form. It's an ancient belief that's widely held pan-globally by many different traditions. And even today, even though in our culture, Western culture, we don't talk about it as openly. So the idea is that we are not our bodies, right? We are not the circumstances of our life. We're not our gender, right? And so as I went through each of those chapters, talking about what we're not, that's actually based on, I was inspired to base this on something called Neti Neti, which is an ancient, I think it's from ancient yogic tradition, which is the idea of questioning the self, right? What I'm not this, I'm not that, right? So I kind of want everybody to kind of strip away any of these identities that we hold, right? Of the way that we look, our circumstances and our past and the things that have happened to us. And suffering is a part of our human existence, right? That when we are on the other side in spirit form, there is no suffering, that we choose to kind of come into a body in this life in order to experience suffering. So that in and of itself is a really powerful realization sometimes for people. But trauma itself and suffering can in of itself become an identity, right? And so what I'm asking people to kind of look at is that over many lifetimes, look at everything that you've endured. And I think I say this in the book, like there's a saying that says that what doesn't kill you can make you stronger. Sometimes it does kill you, right? Meaning that you died in a past life. You did not survive that physically, but your soul survived it. And you can keep that wisdom and knowledge and power, right? Strength, like look at what I have endured and grown wiser for it, right? So that perspective, challenging the idea of who you are, helps you discover that we're not stuck in these identities, including the things that have happened to us that have caused us our suffering in this life.
Yeah, because we do get stuck because it's not easy to get unstuck. If it was easy to just move on,
we would just do it, right?
We would have done that by now, you know, not wake up to it each day and be like, how do I shift out of that? And I think it is important that, you know, we come to peace that this is an ongoing journey, but it's an ongoing journey of getting unstuck and growing and healing from our past and knowing that things will keep arising and we have the capabilities within us because of what we have experienced to move through that. Yeah. And again, in this chapter, I'm going to quote you again because I love some of the things you wrote, all of the things you wrote. You say, suffering does not define you. When you look across your lives, you can take inspiration from what you have come through. This perspective does not make your challenges go away, but when you realize there is a purpose to your suffering and that your soul has chosen this path, you no longer need to allow the suffering to become your identity. It is only today's battle, and you have fought and won before in many places and in many times. So, Michelle, talk to us about how we tap into those very powerful and abundant capabilities that we have accumulated over time, but that may be buried beneath the surface, so that we can overcome suffering in our daily lives in this lifetime, especially when that involves overcoming trauma in this lifetime from childhood.
Yeah. You know, sometimes just remembering that it comes from a past life allows you to kind of release it unconsciously, right? And part of the reason I wrote this book as an interactive journey through your past lives and into your best future is because I wanted people to have a chance to experience their own past lives, you know, by way of all of the meditations and the journaling work that I do, that, you know, if I could recall memories from my past lives, you can too, right? It's a matter of learning how it works. Some people have past life dreams. Some people, you know, open up their third eye and have clairvoyant experiences. And some people have a just knowing or travel to a place that they feel really drawn to, or question like different time periods that they like. And often when you kind of push on that, the stuff that bubbles up from the surface is often pretty surprising. So being aware of the fact that there's a past life story there, sometimes it's like, oh, that was a past life. I don't need to attach to that right now. That's not supposed to be informing, you know, my life today. And trauma also can have an energy to it. And you know, I also want to qualify this. I am not a therapist. And doing work like this is not a replacement for therapy. I want to be really, really clear with that, because there's a lot of, you know, what's called spiritual bypassing, where people are kind of like, oh, I meditated, now I know all my past lives, so I'm totally fine, right? You really have to kind of approach this work as, you know, supplemental to kind of any mental health journey that you're on, right? And that is something that a lot of people kind of do. They're like, love and light and everything's fine and I've overcome my trauma. You're actually not really digging in and doing the real work. So again, this is, like I said, not a replacement for your therapist, but rather supplemental to it. But trauma can have an energy, right? And that energy exists in your unconscious. So, you know, I think it's a quote from Carl Jung, like, until you make your unconscious conscious, it'll rule your life and you'll call it fate. That's one of my favorite quotes by him. The unconscious mind is incredibly powerful. And when you have trauma that's buried under the surface, meaning that it comes from a past life, and you're not aware of it on a conscious level, it actually can inform your thoughts, your beliefs. It can hold you back. It leads to fears, limiting belief systems. I get people that are like afraid to take risks in their career or let somebody in and fall in love because they have these beliefs that are unconscious, like, well, that's not going to work out for me, or I don't deserve this, or like fill in the blank, right? So one of the things that past lives do is they help you kind of take that narrative and make it conscious, where you're able to kind of be like, well, this is why I'm afraid of XYZ, because this happened to me before. So sometimes it's just that making the unconscious conscious that can create a powerful shift, if that makes sense. And then you're able to deal with the stuff from this life in a different way, because sometimes the trauma that happens in this life is happening on top of a layer that comes from a past life too, which is why it sometimes can feel disproportionately large, right? And you know, so, or you'll have a belief, well, this is always what happens to me, right? That could be because 500 years ago it happened and you're like, well, it happened again, right? So you're able to kind of look at it and see it really for what it is and isolate the events in this life as just in this life without all of that unconscious fear informing the work that you're doing to unravel your journey and your story from this life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess what you touch on is that, so there's two parts of this really in terms of, as you said, you could have experienced trauma in a past life that then comes up as ways that hinder you in this lifetime. And if you experience trauma in this lifetime as well, it's going to kind of have that, as you said, that snowball effect of feeling even bigger. The other side of that is that past lives could have given us, and really did when we dig deep enough, the power and capabilities to confront the traumas that we go through in this life. Yeah. So talking of, for example, child sexual abuse, when I reflect back, I haven't gone to a past life where I've experienced trauma. I feel like my past lives, though, gave me capabilities to get through what I went through. And I think many of us have those capabilities as much as we have the things that can sabotage us. And so if we can say, yes, okay, I have some underlying trauma and real trauma from this lifetime and perhaps past lifetimes, but let me put that on a shelf for a second. Let me dig into the capabilities and powers that I have within me to help overcome those. And I think that's definitely so essential, because we need a lot of that stuff to get through. So what are some practices
I was going to say, you're exactly spot on. Sometimes your past life story has something that you need to get rid of, right? Something that you need to release. But sometimes it's something you need to channel or bring in, your inner royalty or your inner warrior, right? And also looking at all of these false identities that we have connected to this life, once we discover our true identity, it's like, wow, I am ancient, wise, eternal, beautiful, right? There's a confidence that comes with like knowing that, that really allows you to kind of, I really decided to challenge myself in this life, right? So it does help you really kind of reframe the way that you look at yourself, which is why I call the book, Who Do You Think You Are, right? And yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's like, gosh, I in the 1700s was really, you know, enduring a lot and a really powerful person. How can I use that inner warrior in my life today, right? You're absolutely spot on. Sometimes it's about releasing. Sometimes it's about reclaiming pieces of ourselves. And a lot of past life trauma work that I do, some of the approach I take is related to some of these like shamanic practices that are around things called like soul retrieval. I don't know if you've ever heard of this, but the concept is that when we experience a trauma, that a piece of our consciousness or our soul splinters off, and healing occurs when we go back and reclaim that piece of ourself. So in a lot of shamanic traditions, it's the shaman who journeys to the spirit world to bring back your inner child, your inner wounded child, or the past person who was burned to death as a witch, who's now afraid to speak her truth, right? So instead of journeying for you, I'm encouraging people to journey for themselves, to go and powerfully reclaim those pieces of themselves that have been splintered off by our suffering, which is part of being human, right? And feel more whole, more healed, and more of the best version of themselves that they can be in order to kind of step into the future that represents the highest potential that you have in this lifetime.
Yeah. And I love those words, reclaiming those parts of yourself, because that is the opportunity to reclaim that.
Yes. And you're empowered to
Exactly. Yes. And so jumping into, we're kind of going backwards, chapter five, you titled chapter five, You Are Not Your Thoughts and Beliefs. And we were just talking about that a little bit. But again, I want to quote you from chapter five. You highlight in chapter five, thoughts come from experiences and memories from both this life and past lives. They often are based on an unconscious belief that if something happened before, it more than likely will happen again. You continue a little later in the chapter, you can reframe how and why these thoughts occur by examining where they come from, the memories from the past and present that formed them. And so I think all of the listeners are intimately familiar with how we battle our thoughts and our beliefs. But can you talk more about, again, when we go into that deep awareness of past lives and really examine where they come from, how that can really help us to shift those unwanted thoughts and beliefs in our lives today, right? And what are some practices that you can offer to the listeners to help them to go into that unconscious space?
Yeah, great question. You know, I look at past life work as an older version of yourself looking at a younger version of yourself, right? 500 years ago, you were less evolved, more green, didn't know what you were doing, right? And I know that this happens often for people who have experienced childhood trauma. Often those memories will be repressed. And they come out later, sometimes spontaneously and very dramatically, as they're old, when they're older. I believe, and like I said, I'm not a therapist and this is just my theory, but I believe that our unconscious mind represents our soul, our spirit, our higher self, and therefore is always guiding us and protecting us. And so if something's been repressed and you can't remember it, it's to protect you. And it comes out later when you're older, wiser, and have more tools available to you to handle it, right? So somebody who can't remember something that happened to them when they were five, there's a reason for that, right? So when I'm doing past life work with people, this is why I never, ever direct people to a specific time period or place. you know, people are like, oh, I need to know if I was in the Civil War. I'm like, well, if that's what comes up for you today, that's what you need to know. That's how this process stays safe, right? So if the worst thing that's ever happened to you in the history of all humanity is what comes up, it means that you're a person who's ready to handle it, right? So allowing this to be a constant process and approaching it as a process that you're going to get little pieces, little snippets, right? A lot of people are scared, like, what if I remember I was a terrible person, or what if something traumatic happens? That is not my approach. I want people to start to chip away and bring up little pieces for their healing and their growth. But, you know, in the 1200s or the 1500s, like, there, that's like looking back at ourselves in kindergarten, right? From the perspective of being like in grad school now, where we're able to process it, understand it, because we're an older, wiser version of ourselves. And in the book, I offer a million and one different approaches, exercises, because it's really different for everybody. Some people respond well to like a journaling prompt where they'll just start writing, almost like automatic writing, and things will come up that they are like, oh, and more things come to mind. Some people, it works better to invite it in a dream, right? Or I have a lot of meditation exercises, and what works one day for somebody might not work another day, right? It's constantly changing and shifting. I really wrote the book to be a guide that you can use for the rest of this life to constantly be discovering newer things, you know, as we get older and wiser and have more tools and become more healed and more whole, to be able to constantly, I don't think we'll ever run out of work to do, right? A lot of people are like, when do we get to stop reincarnating? I don't think we ever do, right? I think there's always more to know. There's always ways that we can be better, right? So that's my approach. And I, again, I really want people to kind of look at it as a continual process of self-discovery. And it's the best armchair adventure, I think, out there, at least in my opinion. I'm such a history nerd. Like, where are we going today? What part of the world are we going to be in, right? It's exciting, but at the same time, very, very healing and potentially transformative for people.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And that's why I love the subtitle is An Interactive Journey. And that's what you provide us. And it also really, what I experience is that it just reminds us the journey is in our hands. We just have to step back from the busyness of everything and the habits we have in each day and reclaim time for ourselves to go there, because otherwise we so easily just keep getting lost and feeling overwhelmed because we're not giving ourselves that space to go into ourselves and uncover where we need to go next, or you know, what are those things that are influencing us. And it's also why I have not only the paperback of the book, because you do give some fantastic journaling opportunities throughout the book that you can write wonderful reflections yourself. I also have the audio book that I've listened to, because you have some wonderful meditations that you take people through. So those two things in particular, I think, provide a really beautiful journey that people can kind of take a time out and softly go in to, and, you know, meet yourself where you are.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I love that you pointed out that it's an interactive journey, because I think that approaching it as a journey allows us to have compassion for our own process. And a lot of the trauma survivors I work with tend to be really hard on themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's because you had to power through life, right? And so kind of looking at this as a never-ending process, I think really allows people to just give yourself a break and allow yourself to be where you're at, right? And I think that that's like a super important way to look at it.
Yeah. And so jumping into chapter 6, you are not your relationships or your roles. And again, this goes to the power of doing what we just said, giving yourself the space to say, oh, you know, let me think about my relationships. Let me think about those roles. How do they define me? How are they a fit? How are they not a fit? Where's the sense of obligation coming for those? You know, where am I happy and thriving, and where am I unhappy but just putting up with things? So talk to us about that.
Yeah. And I think that this is true, that many of us who have broken childhoods, and that's like kind of how I like to, you know, there are different types of trauma, broken, disrupted, broken childhoods. We tend to feel like we have to please others or fit into certain roles, or like, again, being hard on ourselves. And roles in themselves can define us, right? And then looking and comparing ourselves to others, well, they play this role and they're a CEO and I'm not, or they're married and I'm not, right? So like really kind of looking at the idea of roles as fluid, because in a past life, you might be married in this life, but in a past life, you weren't lucky enough to meet your soulmate, right? Or, you know, you might be successful in this life, and you can look back at past lives and see when you weren't wealthy, maybe even impoverished, right? So, you know, looking at the way that we show up for each other, because the way that we show up for each other is a really important part of how we learn, grow, heal in this life, right? We don't learn in a vacuum. We learn from our interactions with each other. So, and we do flip-flop roles over past lives, right? Like, someone who is, say, your son in this life might have been your spouse in a past life, or your sister could have been your father, right? So really understanding that we're here to learn how to love each other, not to overly simplify it, like, you know, that we're here to learn how to show up for each other and how to force each other or coax each other, depending on the situation, into situations that will allow us to grow and evolve, right? So yeah, the relationship and roles, and I'm actually working on my second book already, which is just about relationships and soulmates, because that's its whole own topic. But for the purposes of this book, I really wanted people to kind of look at how am I showing up for other people, and how do my past lives kind of teach me, like, oh, well, I don't need to martyr myself for this relationship. And maybe there's a past life story or reason that I'm doing so. So yeah, I think that our interactions with our fellow humans are often the hardest part about being human, right? We could all just go meditate alone on a mountaintop all day. We'd be totally, totally fine. It doesn't work that way. So yeah, I really wanted people to kind of understand that the way that we show up for each other changes. So we can't be defined by any role or relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, if you have experienced childhood trauma, especially something like child sexual abuse in this lifetime, that obviously can work to sabotage your relationship, certainly your feelings of trust and your feeling of safety when connecting with others. Yet, as we know, we are beings who need and thrive on connection with others. And so, you know, when we are finding that we're wanting to connect with others, but we feel things coming up that act as a barrier to that, I think that's also when we can step back and say, okay, what powers, what capabilities, you know, who would I be if I wanted to step into this relationship? And, you know, envision the hero within to walk into that space and maintain your barriers of safety, but feel the ability to move into that and tiptoe into that if you need to, but not retreat from it.
That's beautifully said. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so chapter 8, you are not your story. And as I was reading and listening to that, I felt the need to qualify that a little bit, because it's really that you are not your preconceived story, mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? Because the way we reframe our stories is an incredibly powerful way to heal and grow. And you talk about that. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, that chapter seems to be one that a lot of people really do connect to. And yeah, it's about these narratives that we tell ourselves that end up being true unconsciously, right? So yeah, the preconceived story, I am this, I am that, this is what happened to me. But you're right, like we don't want to completely lose story. And I talk about this in the book that story is how we relate to each other. It's how we frame our existence and how we understand it, give it context, give it meaning, right? The earliest humans came up with stories that were myths about how, you know, the universe worked and the world worked. So we want to keep the idea of story as a sacred kind of art form, right? In that, like, it's how we relate ourselves to our lives and put ourselves in the context of the universe at large. But what I want people to do is to question their narrative. Is that narrative serving me? Is that story that I'm telling myself that ends up being true because I keep repeating it a reflection of who I want to become, right? Because this book really is about creating the future. And, you know, constantly checking in with my story, like, is that true? Okay. No, that's not necessarily true. That's based on, oh, this happened to me in a past life. And that's why I'm continuing to tell this story in the way that I tell it. Because story can be that powerful. It really can.
And that kind of also taps into one of the things you talk about, which is our point of view, you know, and when we look at our stories and decide the story we want to shape as we move forward, it really is ours to create. But again, we have to shift our beliefs and our thoughts and our roles and our relationships. And also just, again, chapter 10, you talk about changing your point of view. And that's in part three of the book, because you go on in part three to focus on how to create your future. So given all of that, how do we step forward? And you talk about changing your point of view as the first thing to stepping forward. And you say, you know, at the end of the day, life is what matters the most. Knowledge of the past is most valuable when it can teach us something about the present and where we are right now. And that's really where we have to start, right? What's our point of view?
Right. Yeah. You know, and I think that maybe one of the reasons why this book came out today, now in these times, is because I think that collectively as a society, we are having larger conversations about history, about who gets to control the narrative of history, what type of history is studied, right? Because of the power of that perspective. When we look back at the past, we can see patterns that we're stuck in. We can see what worked, what didn't work. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, different ways of thinking about this, but, you know, looking back at the past is really the key to discovering the future, right? Because of the fact that patterns do repeat themselves. So, you know, I really think that it's why the book came out right now, because of what we're dealing with and grappling with collectively. Who do we want to be as a humanity? What kind of people do we want to be individually, but also in our communities, the way that we relate to each other? So what I talk about from the point of view is from the point of view of the present day, looking back at the past, because past lives are your history. They're your personal history, right? We have our collective history. And then what role you played in that past history helps you see who you want to be in the future. And I believe that any change that we make collectively has to start with individuals. We all have to decide, like, who do I want to be? Who do I want to become, right? There's a lot of talk in this book about kind of bias and hate and prejudice, right? And that some of these things can be unconscious and come from past lives. But if we are going to eradicate hate and create a more peaceful, loving society, we have to start looking back at the past, be honest about it, tell the truth about it, And then we can deal with the present, understand what we got today, and then decide who we want to become in the future. So that's what I mean by I talk about your changing your point of view.
Yeah. And as you talk about creating our future, as you said, it's not just about our personal individual future. It is about our collective future. And yeah, it is the opportunity to look out into the world and amidst all the challenge and the messiness and the conflict that we see every day that mm-hmm. can cause us to feel helpless and hopeless at times. Yeah. You know, we need to be able to step back and somehow say, I got this. And and I got this based upon who I'm here to be and the discovery of what I can contribute to my own happiness, my family's happiness, my community's happiness. And maybe there's something that, you know, I want to see in the world, and maybe I could do something about that. Because when we tap into being part of a greater whole, when we feel like we're part of a community and we're all working together for a good ends. And again, that can be whatever community and whatever people you say are your people. Like, this is my thing, and this is my cause, and these my people. And so this is what I want to step into each day. And these are the relationships and the connections I want to make each day. And where could I start with that? And just start there, because I think otherwise we can look at the media, we can look at what's happening in the world, we can reflect on the trauma that we've experienced, and it can seem full of overwhelm instead of full of opportunity to create, you know. And I think that's, again, your third part of the book on creating your future is in, again, taking that time to pause and really give ourselves the gift of, you know, I got this. And what does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted people to feel empowered to their own future and their own lives, right? And I think that a lot of people can relate to the idea of having a past life in this life, right? Something that you've overcome or seems so kind of far away. It's almost as if it's a past life, that we're constantly growing and evolving and changing. And yeah, what you talk about with all of the collective trauma in the world and the otherness and divisiveness, you know, one of the things that I give people opportunities to discover in this book is that the concept of other is actually also not true. That, you know, these are based on false identities, whether it's your ethnicity, your religion, your gender expression, right? Even the things that happen to you, the circumstances of your life. And I have always said this to people, that, you know, if everybody could see what I've seen over the now almost 20 years that I've been working with individuals doing past life work, there would be world peace, right? Like, we would naturally be able to kind of have compassion and empathy to see each other as a soul, not a body, right? And so, you know, I know it's a lofty goal, but you know, I'm doing my best to kind of spread that message as far as I can, you know, to everyone, because I think it's very needed today, very, very needed.
Yeah. And we know, and research tells us, when we do things that are part of a collective goodness, we all grow, you know, the endorphins all go off, and, you know, serotonin increases and dopamine increases and all those good neurobiological reactions start happening, and we start feeling good, and those feelings of joy and contribution. And, you know, in my podcast with Bruce Perry earlier in this season, you know, we spoke about microdosing good things, you know, to overcome the negative stuff, and, you know, taking small doses of good things throughout each day. And I think that's so essential. When we're talking about this, I think it's, again, essential to say, what are the good things I can be doing every day? Because ultimately, it has a cumulative effect. And it does start to give you a brighter light than the darkness that we can get stuck in sometimes.
I love that. Actionable steps, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. Definitely. Yeah.
And you mentioned something before that I'd wanted to kind of touch on as well, which is something that I feel often, and I've almost kind of nurtured this feeling in myself, is to think of some of the things that have happened to me in this life as past lives already. Like, yeah, time is just time, whether it's, yeah, a past life or this life. Time is past as soon as it is past.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the extent to which we can see that in the past, I think it lightens the load a bit and helps us to let go. If we can say, imagine, you know, the trauma that I experienced as a child was a past life. You know, yeah, what did I learn from that? How can I release from it a little bit? I think that, again, it gives us power. It gives us a sense of choice. It gives us a sense of freedom. It gives us ourselves back to be all we are here to be now and in, definitely, the future.
Yeah. You know, and I'm such a student of nature that, you know, these cycles of life, death, and rebirth are always happening around us all the time. And because we are a part of nature, to me, it makes a lot of sense that we would reincarnate as well, but that it doesn't have to be when we die that we reincarnate. We're actually always reincarnating. Our cells are always turning over, right? And we're evolving and growing. And so that's a really important perspective, particularly for people who've had difficult periods of their life, childhood trauma, to be able to kind of be like, well, I've evolved past that. I got the lesson, kept the wisdom, getting rid of all of the negative kind of ways that it holds you back, right? It is a very, very powerful way to look at it. But to me, it's true. Like, we're constantly reincarnating. You don't have to wait till you die to have a past life. You can have one anytime you choose.
We can. And I love your example of nature, because we are nature. Yeah. And we are part of that regenerative cycle. As you said, our cells regenerate, our beings regenerate. And once we see it, that we have the choice to nurture that and not just leave it at the will of whatever, you know, then we can really have confidence that, again, we've got this. Yeah. We can move it with this and grow with it, heal, yep, with it and thrive in it. And in chapter 11, you know, I love, again, your chapter titles as much as anything. You say, you are a soul. Your purpose is love. And you pose, mm-hmm, the question, we've been discussing what we are not. So what are we then? And I love that question because it is full of positive possibilities. So can you help us answer that question?
Yeah. And, you know, once we discover all the things that we're not, what's left is this eternal, immortal being who's lived and died many lifetimes, right? And I don't necessarily need people to call it soul or spirit. Some people would rather call it their higher self, their authentic self, their unconscious self, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be even spiritual or religious, right? With the idea that who we are has nothing to do with our bodies and the circumstances of our life, that our true identity is, I call it soul, right? And that the reason that we're here is to learn lessons about love. And those include self-love, right? So that was actually my favorite chapter to write, because it's like, okay, well, all the things that we're not, now who are we? And having that perspective and claiming that identity can be potentially very, very life-changing for people. And I invite people to kind of come to that conclusion. Some people are already there. Like, I get it. I know I'm a soul, right? I give people practical tools in this book of ways to kind of see yourself in different bodies and different forms, right? In order to kind of be like, well, wait, I've been black, white, rich, poor, male, female, all of these things, right? So it's one thing to believe in something, and it's another to experience it directly, right? because then that becomes your truth. And what's true for you might not be true for someone else. I believe that truth is a completely individual concept. So and again, it all comes down to love. Love is why we're here.
When I reflect on that heading and the second part of that, your purpose is love, I think the big reflection too that it enables us to have is we're here to practice to love ourselves, as you said, you know, self-care. And when we've been through goodness knows what trauma sometimes in past lives, and when we have been through childhood trauma in this life, you know, we grow with thoughts that are more negative and constraining and conflict driven more than they are growth oriented, you know, because that's just what our survival mechanisms did for us. And those feelings of unworthiness and shame and guilt and all of those things. And I think that the wonderful opportunity that you offer people in this chapter and by highlighting this is, you know what, let's practice just loving ourselves more each day. And what would that look like? If I was just to say this afternoon or this evening or tomorrow, I'm going to show myself some love and some kindness. What would that look like? You know, is it a butterfly hug? And just holding ourselves, you know, is it stepping out into nature? Is it just giving ourselves a break? But certainly it's probably lightening up on the negative thoughts, you know, and being aware of that. But I think it's a beautiful invitation to just say, you know what, we've come a long way on our journeys. How can we just lighten up, give ourselves a break, and love ourselves that little bit more each day?
Totally. And I think I love that you pointed out that I said our purpose is love, you know, because I want people to understand that life on planet Earth has a purpose, it has a meaning, there's a point of being here, right? And we're evolving anyway. So what I'm inviting people to do is to evolve more consciously, to decide who you want to be, decide where you want to go, and then look back at the past in order to figure out what you need to know, what's the backstory, right? How do my past lives connect to, you know, where I am right now? And again, yeah, that includes having compassion, self-love, love for the self. I found that some of the most evolved souls I work with, and I talk about this in the book, I don't usually like to use the term old soul because I don't believe age guarantees wisdom at all. In fact, you can be old and ignorant. Many people are. I use the term evolved soul, people who have maybe chosen to challenge themselves a little bit more deeply in this life, right? And I often wondered this when I was a child, like, why do some people get to be 100 and babies die? Or why are some people blessed with good health and other people have to be in a wheelchair their whole life, right? It wasn't really until I understood how reincarnation worked that that really made sense to me. You know, and some of the more evolved souls are learning lessons about self-love, right? About putting themselves first. You know, they know how to be compassionate and care about everyone else, right? So not to miss out on those lessons, but that there's a purpose behind it. That's why we're here. We're here to learn and grow.
Yeah. And as you wrap up the book, you step into that a little bit further in chapter 12, again, that you title, It's Not Who You Are, but Who You Can Become. And I love the opening paragraphs that you present to us in this chapter. You start, we human beings have an abiding fascination with the future. We want to know what is going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. And you go on to say, we have an innate desire to feel in control and to quell our anxiety by knowing what to expect and predicting what is going to happen down the road. But the future has not been determined. We are constantly creating the future based on our choices. So the future is actually something we can control. Your future is of your own making. And I think that just sums that up and the opportunity we have so beautifully to make choices in this lifetime to allow us to step into our best future, day by day with that awareness and understanding of our past lives.
Definitely. I mean, that perspective is so powerful to be able to look back at the past and draw on that wisdom, right? We've already grown old and wise many times. How can we use that wisdom to navigate these challenging times today? We need this, right? We need to be able to step up to the plate because, you know, what the way that we've been doing things in the past aren't working anymore, you know, and it's clear, but yet people are having a hard time, you know, letting go of some of their beliefs and thoughts and attitudes that are sometimes based on past trauma. We have our personal trauma and our collective trauma. But, you know, what I'm inviting people to kind of do is to step into more of their healing so that we can create a better future, not only for ourselves that features more joy, love, abundance, but also collectively as a society, learn how to better love each other, connect to each other. Like I said, it's probably the reason that the book reincarnated so many times and didn't come out till 2024. I really wrote this, the bulk of it, the idea came during the COVID lockdown and the height of the Black Lives Matter protests that were happening here where I live in New York City. And I really felt that my message really was fueled by all of the divisiveness that I saw. So, and again, I believe that any collective change starts with the individual. You know, we want to be happy, fulfilled, loved and loving beings ourselves. And then when we can actually master that, that'll naturally shift into the society at large.
And Michelle, I definitely believe that you landed this book at precisely the right time.
Thank you.
So any final insights and reflections for listeners?
Final insights. I think that you can choose to reincarnate. And I wanted the book to be fun also too, because I actually found when I was in the process of uncovering all of my past life memories, it was exciting. You know, it was heavy. It was serious at times also too, but it was really, you know, just such a beautiful journey into kind of who I was as a person and what motivated me. So, you know, I'm hoping that people find that same joy and excitement and fun in the book that I found when I first began this process of discovery for myself.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it is fun and it is creative, and even the colors of the book are colorful. Yeah. And it's a place you can create for yourself as a gift to take that time out. And as you said, have fun with it. Create. Why not? What do we have to lose? Especially after all we've been through, right?
Totally. Self-exploration is the best exploration, I think.
I love that. Michelle Brock, thank you so much. I'll make sure on the website for the podcast, there's the link to your book and more about you and your website and how people can engage with you. So, Michelle, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much.
To receive notifications of the podcast, subscribe or follow the podcast today, and visit overcomingchildsexualabuse.com for more about this and upcoming podcasts. Remember, to get help for anything you're going through, reach out to a qualified professional. You can search the internet, call 24/7 hotlines, including the National Child Abuse Hotline, or speak to your doctor for resources. In case of a mental health emergency, please don't hesitate to call 911.